This is a podcast for Thursday, April 7th, 2011, Contemporary Moral Issues. So today we're going to finish discussing abortion and move into discussing human cloning. And for next week, we're going to be talking about some of these economic issues, issues about taxation, regulation, debts, deficits, capitalism, socialism, so-called mixed economies. And I'll have some handouts in Moodle. I'll have some printed copies for you on Tuesday, and then we'll have probably the first hour we'll have maybe a half hour, 45 minute of lecture discussion, and then the second hour we'll be having more open ended discussion. I'll give you the reading to do, and we'll have some more discussion of that on the following Thursday. So all next week is going to be economic issues. So that Thursday also, I think I'll be doing some review then. So I think the test will open on Thursday of week three, which is next week. And then you'll have until the following Thursday to take the exam. Tonight, 5:30, Stephen Shoemaker will be talking about the quest for the historical Muhammad. So if you're interested in Islam, there's a write-up on the Torch today about the speaker. And I think it'd be very interesting. The speaker thinks that Muhammad is widely misinterpreted by current academics who ignore the apocalyptic element in his teaching, this idea that the end of the world is coming. So tonight, 5:30, Center for Media and Learning, downstairs at the end of the spiral staircase, CML 104, Building 19. So just I'd like to also give you a brief reminder that we are talking about issues which are touchy and of a sensitive nature. So it'll be important to be respectful and calm and to keep a cool head and to refrain from making incendiary remarks and personal attacks. So let's try to avoid that, and I'll be friends here and try to keep a attitude of professional attachment in this very controversial issue. And you know, keep in mind, there's a likelihood there's someone in this room who's had an abortion. It's also possible there's someone in this room who was their mother was tried to get an abortion and couldn't get one, and they ended up being born. So you can get people have personal histories which are related to these issues in various ways, and so you get people with emotional attachments to one view or the other. And so again, let's try to be rational and not when we make decisions about what good social policy is or what's moral and ethical, just go on our subjective personal experience, which of course isn't everyone's experience, and it may not be indicative of what's best for society or what's moral or ethical. So let's start out talking about the reading. So we had Don Marquis gives a kind of an argument from potential. How is abortion distinct from birth control? So how do you avoid, if you're a pro-lifer, how do you avoid the counterintuitive consequence that all birth control is wrong if you're saying that abortion is wrong?
Birth control is provided and abortion is an after the fact go fix it.
Yeah, so there's a difference in the kind of potential you're talking about. Yeah.
No, we were never an egg or a sperm, but we were all a fetus.
Yeah, and the other author, the pro-choice author, or abortion rights author, she actually agrees with this. She mentions this aspect and says, yes, it is human life, and yes, human life begins at conception. I think it's important, too. You'll hear often people in the abortion debate, and they'll say, it's a mystery when human life begins. And sometimes you think, well, did you take third grade biology? You remember with the slideshow? And when I was a kid, it was a film strip, or the old films, right? They show a little sperm penetrating the egg and it becomes an embryo. And biologically or scientifically, human life begins at conception. But then there's the further question of what's the moral difference? or does an embryo have moral status as a human being in its early stages of development? So the pro-choice author says, yes, human life begins at conception. That's a verifiable human fact. She agrees with Marquis about that. What she disagrees with is that, and she also agrees with Marquis that human life at its early stage of development has some value. So she agrees with him in that respect. But she wants to say that that doesn't mean that it has rights, and it doesn't mean that it can't be destroyed under any conditions. And so so as just sort of a one of the things you try to do in debates about morality is try to find common ground. So what can you get most people to agree on, and then try to make some headway, rather than kind of knocking heads and trying to find what you disagree on. And when you're trying to persuade another person, you might say, well, look, would you agree with this? And you give an argument, and the other person, if they're being open-minded and rational, and you present a good argument and good evidence, they'll say, okay, well, I can agree with that. And then you can have a discussion, and you have a kind of a foundation. And there are a lot of these ideas out there that have wide appeal and that people widely agree about. So those are always good starting places for discussions of controversial issues, because that way you can be really clear on what exactly it is you're disagreeing with. And sometimes it turns out that you don't have a disagreement on a fundamental moral principle at all. What you have a disagreement is about is how what the practical consequences of a certain kind of policy or action would be. So you're not really arguing about morality, but you're arguing about empirical things, about human nature or sort of cause and effect relationships. If you do this, what would be the likely result? So let me get my... I just added some stuff to my PowerPoint because the reading here is new. I think it's actually a little better. The little reading I found to be a bit cumbersome and very, I don't know what the word is, academic. Anybody else get that idea or that feeling? That it was kind of, it's this dense academic prose that was kind of hard to weed through, where Marquis, to me, seems a little more, he's more readable and easier to get a handle on. Doesn't mean his ideas are better, but, you know, if I was an English instructor, I'd say, you know, to Margaret Little, you know, I suppose, you know, if you're an academic, people will do this, and if you're being read by other academics, it's sort of, you write in this kind of, sometimes this abstruse, difficult to penetrate style, but I'm not sure. I think Satras included this article because it does make a pretty good argument, but the style in which it expressed is somewhat dense to penetrate, so I hope to help you with that. Okay, so there's a difference between contraception and abortion, and in that, contraception prevents a human being from coming to existence, and abortion ends the life of a human being. But then, again, the question that we're talking about is, given that fact, what is the right thing to do with regard to abortion? Is abortion always immoral? Is it immoral under most circumstances? Or are early-term abortions, which make up the majority of abortions, are they perhaps regrettable in some respects, but morally permissible? Whether or not abortion is morally permissible stands or falls on whether or not a fetus is the sort of being whose life it is seriously wrong to end. So for him, all talks about circumstances and do I have enough money to raise this child and will the child have a good life, and all of those are ancillary to this question of the moral status of the fetus. And he says, if a fetus is a sort of being whose life it is seriously wrong to end, then virtually no argument for the permissibility of abortion is going to be successful. If, on the other hand, the fetus is not the sort of being whose life it is seriously wrong to end, then just about any reason for abortion would be okay. And if you wanted to have an abortion because you suddenly got an opportunity to go on a European vacation with your new boyfriend, right? That would be okay. because the fetus doesn't have any moral status. If, on the other hand, it's a being whose life is seriously wrong to end, then if you say, well, I'm pregnant now, but I don't have very much money, and I'm trying to get through college, he says that sort of argument, which is the majority of arguments one of the reasons women have abortion. I gave you that handout where I talks about the reason women, the majority of women don't have or get abortions, and one is not ready to have children, not enough money to support a child, some bad religion, not that doesn't have the right father to raise a child, or father doesn't want the child. So you get these sorts of things, and those seem if you're doing something seriously wrong, those don't seem like strong enough reasons to stand against the idea of taking a human life, if it's a seriously wrong thing to do in this context. So, prima facie. He uses this term prima facie a lot. Prima facie means all of the things being equal. So, you might say prima facie, it's wrong to kill another human being. But then you might say, but if someone's trying to kill you, and when you're defending your life, it might be permissible for you to kill them. And so that's this idea of prima facie is just, okay, in normal circumstances, or unless there's some special consideration that outweighs the thing that you're talking about, like it's, if you don't kill somebody else, they're going to kill you. That most of the time, in normal circumstances, unless you have a really strong reason to do it, killing another human being is wrong. Yeah?
I was going to say, I didn't notice that. I was reading this earlier, that the reasons for actually having an abortion didn't tend to be too, how can I say that, important. I mean, the excuses are kind of, I don't know, it just seems like there was, like right here, you got risk of fetal health, 3.3%, risk of maternal health, 2.8%, the rest is either too young, can't afford it, the mother's in college. I mean, some of those, those could obviously be overcome because there's so much assistance out there. I mean, for people that are saying, well, I can't afford to have a kid. I mean, I know mothers personally that are get loads of money to raise their kids right now. So that's mm-hmm.
And yeah, I suppose, what someone on the other side might say.
It's not an argument, but
yeah. So, it seems like it does make a moral difference, yeah. So, when you think about, and someone objected to this partial birth abortion discussion, and I said partial birth abortions are a very extremely small percentage of total abortions. When you're talking about common ground, most people will say, well, partial birth abortion, that seems wrong to me. But they'll want to make this distinction between that and a first trimester abortion. But then the question is, what is that difference? And that helps you get at, I think, some important philosophical considerations. But when you're talking about a broad social policy, then when you're talking about what you need to look at, what are most of the abortions, what are they, and for what reason they perform. So there is, first, there's the idea that they're almost all first trimester, early second trimester abortions, and then the second is that that they're done for what we might speak of broadly construed as convenience or lifestyle choices, if you like. But then again, I think if the fetus doesn't have any moral status, then, whose business is it why you decide to have an abortion? Maybe you think it would, you don't want the stretch marks, right? Or maybe, you don't want to be encumbered with a baby because you're not interested in having a child. You made a, you didn't expect to get pregnant, or you made a mistake, or you got caught up in the heat of passion. Oops, you made a mistake. But if the fetus isn't the sort of being that has rights, then it's like, I know you don't brush your teeth, right? You don't brush your teeth, and you go and you get a cavity, and maybe you have to have a root canal, right? And you got to pay a lot of money for this procedure, and they yank that root out of your tooth. But you don't think about, oh, that poor root that I'm killing in my tooth. Does that root have rights, right? It's just part of your body. You get rid of it, and you know then the problem's solved. So the question is having abortion, is that more like having a root canal, or is that, you know, more like, drowning a kitten or something, right? Or killing an infant. Yeah.
I'm not going to take a side here, but, you know, I guess there's a couple different ways to think about it. In terms of the root canal, it's not really much of a choice. Now, in terms of an abortion, you might be like, well, okay, I want to have a kid, should I have an abortion, or, you know, which seems maybe easier on the surface because there's moral issues probably later on, or, you know, these traumatic feelings. But then, you know, there's always adoption, and then there's like canal fissures.
Could somebody in the back turn off this front row?
I think a root canal is a really bad analogy because
the
potentiality of a tooth is never going to be caused
Thank you.
To thought. So I don't think it's a very good analogy.
Yeah, so what I mean, that's this whole idea of potential, right? Okay, suppose me and the wife, we think about having kids. And so we want to be rational about it. So we go to a fertility clinic, and they take some sperm from me and some eggs from her, and they mix them together in a petri dish, and they have these embryos, and they stick them in the freezer. And then as time goes by, I'm thinking, I'm not really interested in having kids. We're getting kind of older, you know, having a kid now. It's just, if I'm like in my 60s, by the time he gets in the high school, it's going to be kind of a drag. And I'd be want to like hang out at the golf course or whatever. And maybe it's going to be a drag for him to have like, everybody thinks I'm his grandpa. And so I'm like, eh. And so, and it's costing me like storage fees every month. I got to pay to have these embryos preserved. So maybe I tell them, just destroy those embryos. I'm not interested in having kids anymore. Or maybe we decide it's time to have a kid, and we just pick like one embryo, right? And the rest of them we like sell them to a lab that does embryonic stem cell research, maybe, or something, right? So the question is that wrong? Is that, does the potential matter? Because each and every one of those embryos, if implanted in a uterus, will grow into a human being, and they're kind of in limbo. And I suppose it's, you know, but they're still, are they alive when they're frozen? Well, I mean, they were alive at one time, right? So what I did was I created life, or I together with the scientific lab, we created life. We froze it or put it in suspended animation, and then the question is, would it be wrong to destroy it? And some people would say, look, it's just it's a clump of cells. It's not even, you know, hasn't really started to differentiate. It's not, that's not really, even though technically speaking it's human life, it's not like a person. It's not, maybe it's technically a human being, but it's not really something that has rights. Now, the second author, Little, says, well, it's not nothing, so it counts for something because it's got that potential. And she says that's why when you have a miscarriage early on, it's not as traumatic as if you have one like really late on, or you have a stillbirth or something like that. That's really traumatic. I've had some friends that have gone through that, and they said that's a traumatic experience. Whereas, you know, sometimes a woman might miscarry and not even know it. You know, their period might be a little more heavy, especially if it's really early on. You can find out you're pregnant, and then find out you're no longer pregnant, and you think, oh, I had a really heavy period last time, and the doctor says, well, I think you probably had a miscarriage. And so her idea is you have this kind of gradual development over time, and as the fetus develops, the more the fetus develops, the more valuable it is. And the greater moral stays as. And so that's why she would say early on, no rights, not that important, pretty much any reason. If you made a mistake and had unprotected sex, that wasn't a prudent decision, but you can fix it, and it's kind of regrettable that you have to, but it's no more regrettable than some other decision you might make. Like, I think she gives the example of turning down a marriage proposal from someone who would make your family very happy as sort of an example of something where it would be, it seems that when you're making a big sacrifice like that, you have to take into account your own desires. And I think she's got another example. There's another author that talks about this example of you know, the sort of irresponsible sexual behavior, and talks about, well, what if there are these people seeds floating around, and what if like a people seed lands on you, it makes you pregnant or something. So this idea that a people seed, it attaches to your body in some way. So now there's things you can do that are prudent, which is avoid, you know, like wear protective clothing, and don't go places where people's seeds are, you know, in bloom and so on. So you can see the, where the analogy goes. And the idea is that if you, like say one day you're in a rush and you're going to a heavy people seed area, but you don't put on your special protective clothing and you just sort of take your chances and one of these little people seeds land on you, the question is it okay to like detach it even though it'll kill the growing person? And the author says, well, no, because even though you might have acted irresponsibly, it doesn't mean that because of that behavior you're required to make this huge sacrifice, which is like have this, you know, thing growing on you for 9 months. Now let me just go through a couple more things of Marquis's argument. So is it prima facie wrong to kill a human being? And most people would say yes. What is a human being? A human being is something with a human genetic code. And then he talks about this idea of person. You know, what is a person? So there's a distinction between a person and a human being. So a human being is just a living organism with a human genetic code. And, you know, a whole human being, not like just like a part of a human being. So a finger has no potential to become a human being. Or, you know, even a heart isn't a human being, it's a part of a human being. But an embryo is a human being. An embryo is like the acorn, which will become the oak tree. And you can think about acorns as being like little oak trees. It's an oak tree in its earliest stages of development. If planted in the ground and given enough water and, you know, later enough water and the right soil conditions, it will turn into an oak tree. You know, and then you can think about like in its early, after it starts growing and it pops out of the ground, that would be sort of like birth. And then, you know, when it's a sapling, that's like being an infant. And just like the acorn becomes the oak tree, an embryo becomes a fully grown human being. So we might say the fetus or the embryo becomes a human being, even though, you know, the way we still technically it's already a human being, just at its earliest stage of development. Now, a person is someone with rational self-consciousness. Now, the problem with requiring personhood of any being that has the right to life is that infants aren't persons. So infants are not rational, self-conscious beings. They can only communicate in very rudimentary ways. When an infant is born, it doesn't really have any distinction between of itself as an entity distinct from its mother. And so you get... The brain grows over time and develops this rational self-consciousness. Or, you know, if you're dualist, the soul is able to express itself through the brain over time as it develops. But an infant doesn't possess rational self-consciousness or awareness. And so if you're going to say that a fetus isn't a person, therefore it doesn't have rights, you're going to have to say it's okay to kill babies, like babies that are born. Most people think killing babies is bad. And so that's, you know, that's, you know, like born infants. And that's, you, so the, again, wide agreement on that. So then the question is, what's the difference between a fetus and, say, a third trimester fetus and an infant? And again, that it seems that its geographic location is the main difference. You could also say the fetus can't live on its own because it's hooked up to the mother. But then there's the other problem is there's other human beings that can't live on their own, right? Like infants, right? An infant cannot live on its own. And I talked about this last time. If you give birth to an infant and you put it down on the table, turn off the lights, and walk out, that infant's going to die. There's people on that require kidney dialysis. There's people who are quadriplegics who can't take care of themselves. They can't move, right? They need mechanical devices of some sort, or they need home caregivers to keep them alive. Are you going to say those people don't have the right to life? So, so-called viability also seems that it's not really going to fly. Marquis expresses this problem there's problems for both the pro-lifer and the pro-choicer. So the pro-lifer has to show why certain biological characteristics make a moral difference. And so the pro-lifer will say, a fetus has a beating heart, or a fetus, sucks its thumb, or it has, you can see little toes and little feet and its head, right? And it looks like a baby. Well, the question is, why should those make a moral difference? Those might be empirical facts, but why should they make a moral difference? Why does having a beating heart give you a right to life, for example? Because cows have beating hearts, and people eat those. A person irreversible coma. Say a person with extremely severe brain damage so that they're never coming out of that coma. They also have a beating heart but no rational self-consciousness. And many people would say that there's no reason to keep a person like that alive because they have no capacity for consciousness. The pro-choicer, on the other hand, has to show why these psychological characteristics should make a moral difference. Oh, the fetus doesn't have rights because it can't communicate, or because it's not a member of the community or something. So you might say social characteristics too, or it can't engage in moral reasoning. So there's all sorts of arguments why the pro-choicer might give that it lacks certain characteristics, but then you have to show why those will make a moral difference. And Marquis says that these problems go away when you think about what it is that makes murder wrong. Here's another quote from him. So he says, a pro-choicer may attempt to find reasons why killing infants, young children, and the severely retarded, and you might also, people hooked up to heart-lung machines and people who are crippled and so on, it is wrong, which are independent of our major principle, which is that is supposed to explain the wrongness of taking human life, but which will not also make abortion immoral. So here's one of these kind of long sentences, a little difficult to parse. But I think if we take it apart here, the pro-choicer may attempt to find reasons why killing infants, young children, and severely retarded is wrong. Okay, so the pro-choicer is going to say it's wrong to kill infants, young children, and the retarded, but it's not wrong to kill fetuses. And they're looking for a reason which is going to say it's wrong to kill these beings that everyone believes has the right to life, but that same principle doesn't make it also wrong to kill a fetus. So you're looking for consistency. And he says this is no easy task. And again, it'd be rational self-consciousness, viability, be able to live on your own. Those things, if applied to the fetus, are also going to apply to other beings that most people think have rights to life. So what are you going to do? So what Marquis suggests is that what makes murder wrong, if you think about it, it's the deprivation of a worthwhile life. So the deprivation of a future. And so the deprivation of a future is present in abortion, and again, he says, but not in contraception. So in contraception, you're preventing human life from coming into being. In abortion, you're taking human life at its earliest stage of development. And so he thinks that instead of talking about actual characteristics, which is problematic, you can talk about potential, the future a fetus will have. And if you think about, this is why if someone dies when they're young, what do people say? Oh, he died in his prime. Oh, it's so tragic that a person so young, you get you know, a kid that has leukemia, and he's going to, you know, die, kid dies of cancer, right? And that's, like, a lot more tragic than, say, you know, like, an 80-year-old woman dying of cancer. And, you know, both are going to be bad, and both of them are tragic, but the dying young seems to be more tragic. Why is that? Well, he says it's because the young person has their whole life ahead of them. They have, they're losing all these future experiences of a worthwhile life. Whereas the older person is only missing out on a few years, and they would be likely to die of natural causes, you know, in a few years anyway. And so they're not losing as much. So this seems to fit in with our intuitions about you know, people dying, young people dying, being more tragic than very old people dying. Now, he makes the point that there's no duty to maximize potential. So he says, as a consequence of my view, you're not required to be perpetually pregnant and have as many children as possible, right? So that's not his view. And again, he says, you don't have a duty to have as many children as possible, but once there is a child, or once there is a human being conceived, you have a duty not to deprive it of its future. And now, he does use this word worthwhile, so we can have a discussion about, you know, what does worthwhile mean, and maybe you could argue that, well, maybe the fetus who is going to be aborted wouldn't have a worthwhile future. Skip this. Oh, did I put the wrong one on? I did. And let me just I'll get to my last slide here. That's the old author. Get the right one up there. Thoughts so far. So Little has this idea that human life is valuable and respect-worthy, but it's not sacred, doesn't have rights, but that its value grows as it develops. And the other thing she tries to argue is that you shouldn't see the woman's role in pregnancy as passive, as something which is happening to her. She makes this argument that the woman is giving what she calls gestational assistance, in that it's not that she's doing something, that she's allowing the fetus to grow. She's actually contributing to the fetus with her very own body. And so she says it's an important distinction, because it's not as if she just doesn't have to do anything. She's doing something every day to keep this person alive, or this living being alive. She talks about Judith Jarvis Thompson has this famous example, the violinist example. And in this hypothetical example, which ethics is filled with, and which helps us hone in on our moral intuitions, or home in on our moral intuitions, or help us hone our ethical principles. The violinist example is that you're captured by the Society of Music Lovers, and find yourself hooked up to this famous violinist via some contraptions and tubes and needles and so on. And you're being used to sustain the life of this world-famous violinist. The treatment will take 9 months, during which time you will be bedridden and not allowed freedom of mobility and so on and so forth. If you attempt to escape and unhook yourself from the violinist, he will die if you do it before the 9 months. After the 9 months, he'll make a full recovery. So then the question is, would it be wrong for you to try to escape? What do you think? Yeah?
Well, I think that is not a fitting analogy, because there's no causative nature of the attachment.
I also think there's a fallacy in that if this is equating itself to sex, having sex, sex is usually, in most cases, a consensual act. So partaking in it would imply that you're already submitting the possibility that procreation is possible.
Yeah, so those are two objections that usually come right off the bat, that most pregnancies are a result of consensual sex and what we might call irresponsibility, or getting, you know, carried away at the heat of the moment, and pretty rare. Sometimes it's negligence in using birth control, the so-called contraceptive failure, although usually that's some form of negligence.
Okay.
So those are two objections. Now, what about the principle though that if you find yourself in the situation that's been imposed on you in some way, what might that be analogous to? Like in abortion, the violinist example. Well, how about like conception due to rape or something, right? That seems like that might fit rape or incest. And so it might work for that, but it seems like there is a problem with applying this generally to examples the normal way in which unwanted pregnancies are created. But she actually has the same idea, Thompson uses this example to show that although even if you acknowledge that the fetus has some moral status, the woman's right trumps the fetus's right to life. The woman's right to self-determination and to not have to make this huge sacrifice trumps the fetus's right to life. And what Little says is that the wrongness of killing the fetus increases as it develops and as it grows. She also, Little also has this thing where she says pregnancy isn't a condition which is without its risks. And so, in addition to the physical discomfort, there are all sorts of dangers. And, before modern medicine, it was a common occurrence that women would die in childbirth, up through the turn of the 20th century, it was very common for women to die in childbirth, and it's in addition to all the discomfort. So he says that's also, even with modern medicine, things can go wrong, I think the example she uses might be a little extreme. I hadn't heard of pregnancy-related psychosis before, so I'm not sure what the story is with her. I think her sister or something. But you have people that do have medical problems due to pregnancy. So that's something else to consider when you think about the sacrifice. Yeah.
Postpartum
depression.
Yeah.
That's another thing, and that's a known syndrome. The thing she's talking about is something different. But all sorts of things go on with your hormones as a woman, in addition to the physical changes. Yeah.
I heard about a story not too long ago. I think it was in Oregon somewhere that some lady gave birth to a child and it kind of threw off her brain chemistry or whatever. She was depressed and just she wasn't all there anymore. And so her husband knew that she shouldn't be left alone with the kids, and he had to go to work or something. Left the kids at home with her, and she ended up killing the kids and then herself, I think. Or no, I guess she just killed the kids. But now, I think she pleaded insanity or something, right. Got off with it.
So that's an example of what's called postpartum depression. And so it's thought that your hormones get really out of whack. You get the sort of suicidal thoughts, thoughts of worthlessness and despair, and it ends up super common, but it's not unknown for women. Women typically, you kind of feel the blues and kind of feel depressed because you think you're sort of looking forward to this miraculous moment of birth, the whole time, and then finally it's over. And when you're pregnant, all your friends kind of fawn over you, and then you have the baby. The attention goes away from the woman who's pregnant, right, to the baby. And so that might have something to do with it. But there are also hormonal changes. And once that baby is born, the hormones, which are all sort of focused on keeping this baby healthy, all of a sudden are doing things that they don't need to do anymore, and this causes a problem. So that should be considered in the mix. So what Little says is you shouldn't think of it just like I'm big as a whale and it's hard to walk around and my back hurts or something like that. And I was sometimes I get sick in the morning.
For me personally, I've looked at pretty much every issue in this book. I think this is probably the most difficult if you don't already have a stance to establish one, because there are so many factors and so many ways to form the opinions. I mean, for me personally, this is very difficult. I mean, it takes a lot of soul searching, a lot of a better term, to really kind of figure out where I personally stand. So, kind of interesting compared to the other issues that we have and we'll discuss in this class.
Yeah.
I think if if you go to Marquis and you kind of disregard everything else and look at the whole issue as being about potential life and wrongness lies in eliminating potential, then I don't think you really have to consider any other, I don't think you have to consider anything else. I mean, you can, and that can either strengthen or weaken your opinion, but if we're looking at an issue as being either absolutely right or absolutely wrong, then once you establish, well, these are the circumstances under which it is right, under which it is wrong, and then you prove one or disprove the other, then I think you can rationally put your opinion with that and then back it up with whatever evidence you decide.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
I was going to say, that's assuming that you agree that destroying any potential life is wrong.
Well, it's not potential life.
Personally, I might be okay with abortion, but like, I am definitely all for the death penalty. If you kill a bunch of children, you should die.
Well, no,
and
I agree with
like,
you.
If you were to, yeah, but then you can't agree with that statement if you agree that destroying any potential for life is wrong.
No, because then I would have to argue to a further point. I would say human beings that have a rational thought and have taken away potential from other human beings, like you said, killing.
Who's that right?
They sacrifice. They are saying, well, I'm usurping my will over another free person, therefore I basically sacrifice all right to life.
Okay, so then taking away the potential of life isn't 100% right or wrong. So there are gray areas.
There are conditions. There aren't gray areas. I mean, there are conditions. Like, if somebody kills little children, that's a condition saying that they've sacrifice their right to life because they've taken away somebody else's life. But I don't think there's a gray area where, like, if they kill three children, yeah, we should kill them. One, maybe not so much. I don't think there's a gray area when it comes to killing. I think it's either right or it's either wrong.
Like, I want to jump in here for a minute. So one thing is, so three things actually. First thing is, there's no criticism. I know people speak this way, but if you could avoid the word personally, because you know, this isn't a class on your personal feelings. This is a class on moral issues, social issues, which in the first class we talked about, we're going to assume for the sake of argument, are objective. So I don't want you to express your personal opinion or your personal feelings or what you personally believe. Well, you know, what do you believe in personally? I mean, would you say if you believe something personally, it seems like you believe something impersonally. So first, I'd like to just gently encourage you not to use the word personally and to think in terms of objectivity. And sometimes your language can kind of push you in that direction of thinking that morality is like what flavor ice cream you like, which is not the view we'll be assuming in this class. Even though you are perfectly entitled to personally believe that morality is like what flavor ice cream you like, but we won't be doing that for the purposes of this class. And the second thing is that an embryo or a fetus is not potential life; it's actual human life, but it's a potential person. So when you're talking about whether potential human life, there's a difference between an actual human life with a potential future, you might say, or who is a potential person who will become a person if we don't kill it, and an actual potential human life. Potential human life is like egg and sperm, which haven't been stuck together. And then the third thing is on this capital punishment. And this is the conditions. I think Isaac brought up a good point. Okay, suppose I said, do I have to wear pants or not? Suppose that's my question, right? Well, I mean, what would be your answer to that?
Yes.
Yes? What if I'm at home? What if it's just me and the wife, or I live alone? Do I have to wear pants?
No.
So there's no like simple answer to whether I have to wear pants or not, right? Because it depends on the context, right? Now, does that mean that whether you have to wear pants or not is relative? No, it just means that it depends on the circumstances. So the same thing with killing another human being. So self-defense, most people would say, is a permissible killing of a human being. Capital punishment is controversial, but one of the arguments is, well, if you've killed other human beings, you deserve to be killed. But that's different from. But nobody believes that a fetus deserves to be killed. Now, they might say the fetus doesn't have rights, so killing it isn't morally wrong, but that's a different argument. So I think that the distinction between innocent human life and a guilty human being is a pretty stark one. And so it seems like a difficult argument to make to say that if you agree with killing a murderer, that you also have to be, let's see, if you're against abortion, you're against capital punishment. I don't know, but does someone want to, maybe I'm misunderstanding that, does someone want to set me straight on that, or you want to make a rebuttal?
No, I wasn't saying that it's the exact same. I'm saying that his argument, like saying that it's very easy to just be like black and white, like taking away the potential future of a human being is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all I was saying. I'm not saying that just because you're against abortion that you automatically are against punishment. I was just saying in that instance, if that is like taking away the future life of a human being is wrong, then you would assume that capital punishment would be wrong. I'm not saying all the way across the board, I'm saying for that.
Oh, why would you assume that? I don't see why what he said would lead to that conclusion. But,
because it's still taking away the future of a human being. It's not taking away the future of a human being if it's a fetus is wrong. He said taking away the future of a human being is wrong.
Okay, well, again, come back to this term, a very important term, prima facie. What does prima facie mean? All other things being equal. So generally speaking, would you agree it's wrong to commit murder?
Mm-hmm.
Or to kill another human being? But you would say that if someone's trying to kill you, it would be an end. The only way you could defend your life would be to kill them, that would be permissible for you, right? I know some people are complete pacifists and they would say no, but most people agree with that. Some people would say killing in a just war. If you're in uniform, you're in the military, you're a soldier, and you're going against, say, Hitler, and Hitler's trying to take over the world and kill the Jews and, you know, make the master race take over and so on and so forth. Most people would think that killing in a war, killing, you know, soldiers who are part of an evil, you know, conspiracy to take over the world, that would be okay. So you can think there's various self-defense and fighting a just war, two conditions under which most people would say murder or killing another human being is okay. Murder is kind of a tough term because it's got a lot of connotations to it, particularly the idea that it's unjust. So then the question is, you know, what is a fetus? So it's not, again, it's just not like prima facie. So all he's saying is that unless the fetus has done something that deserves death, you know, which seems pretty unlikely, then that argument's not going to work. Yeah.
I have kind of a question for you. If science says that single-celled organisms are alive, then sperm has human DNA, so is that human life? And just every time, you know, they have all of the dad's DNA, once, and they mix.
It's considered a haploid cell.
I know, but it has all the DNA.
Yeah, but I don't think it's considered to be life. Or live.
So organism has life. So every time we use
genetics, or it's alive, but it's like you might like take a tissue sample, like some skin cells or something like that. It's life, but it's not a human being. So an embryo, I think the argument would be the embryo is a human being. It's a living, a human life or human being. So, you know, there might be tissues that should be alive, like say we take a heart out of somebody and we freeze it, or we're carting it across town. That organ is, you might say, is alive, I suppose. Although, you know, these definitions like life is sort of, you know, there's a formal scientific definition which has to do with what self-sustaining, reproducing, you know, so I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, the definition of life might be kind of fuzzy around the edges. Like prions. Prions are these things that cause mad cow disease. People argue about whether the prions are alive because they're just these proteins, but they act kind of like bacteria, which is alive, or viruses. But I think that the distinction would be that going back to potential, an embryo has the potential to become a human being. It's an actual living human being. It has the potential to become a person. Sperm doesn't have a potential to become a person. So it's that potential personhood that is the sort of that gives this the fetus its moral status.
But sperm still does have a potential to be human being.
Not by itself.
But it has a potential to become.
Neither does an embryo without the mother.
But it's a different kind of a potential. It's not actual human life. It's only a, it's not even a potential human being. it has the potential to join with an egg to become a human being. But that's different from having the potential to become a human being by itself. The potential to become a person. Sperm has no potential to become a person, but an embryo does. So I think that would be the Marquis argument. So there's like degrees of potentiality. So the sperm by itself has no potential to become a person. If you put the sperm and egg together, you have an actual human being, which does have the potential to become a person. Now, how about the legal issues? Let's talk about this for a minute. Many people would say, well, abortion is immoral, particularly late-term abortions, but we shouldn't have laws against it because that would lead to a greater evil and the argument is women who want abortions are going to get them anyway, and it's better that we keep abortion safe, legal, and rare than if we try to prohibit it, and that will lead to back alley abortions, women dying, as well as their fetuses who are going to die anyway, and that we ought to do these in controlled medical environments. Yeah?
Why did abortion become legal in the first place?
Because there was a Supreme Court challenge, and the Supreme Court had a liberal majority.
Why did it become...
Couldn't read the Constitution.
Illegal or legal? Why did it become illegal?
It was actually...
Legal.
So it actually is illegal in most states. It was illegal in some states and not legal in others. And there was a court challenge. I had mentioned Norma McCorvey petitioned the court. And she claimed she was raped when she actually wasn't, and she wanted to get an abortion, and then actually ended up having a baby because of the court machinations. So you basically had a lawyer who was looking for a test case, took her on, and the Supreme Court said, all states have to follow these rules, and here's what they are. First trimester, pretty much any reason. Second trimester, the fetus has some status and so has some rights, and so the state can regulate or even prohibit in the second trimester. Third trimester, you're going to have a really, really good reason to have an abortion, and it broke up things that way. And that's sort of the legal history. And it came from... And, you know, at the time in society, there were also, you know, the feminist movement was burgeoning, and women were looking for the right to an abortion, and it was seen as part of the women's rights movement, so that was part of the court challenge, you know. So there are other social things going on, too, that led to that. Yeah?
So why is it so controversial now? Why is it so morally unjust, potentially, now, as opposed to then? Just because we're in a different state and time?
The court imposed its vision on society. So the court imposed a new federal standard on all the states, which had laws that would vary. And after the decision, people still have the views they do about the morality of abortion. And so it's just they think the law is unjust.
Yeah, but that's gonna be their views anyway. The people that aren't going to get abortions because they think it's morally wrong, they're still not going to get an abortion. The people who want to and think that it's okay, and what does it even matter whether it's legal or illegal, just for the fact that it is legal. Somebody made it legal at one point because they thought it was morally okay, or to take the option away from the mother was morally wrong. And now it is, and the people who aren't going to still aren't going to.
Well, I suppose we're living in the 19th century, and I'm a wealthy plantation owner, and I have a lot of slaves. And it's pretty reprehensible for you to treat human beings as property. And I say, if you don't like slavery, don't own one. What might be inappropriate about that response? You think there's something wrong with the treating human beings as property. So, like, my response is, like, it's a matter of personal freedom whether I have slaves or not. I'm assuming that there's no additional moral problem with slavery. That's just a personal choice. But you would say, look, it's not just you. Those are human beings we're talking about. Well, that's what the people who are against abortion, they have that same view about the fetus. It's a human being with rights.
The moral... thoughts on the danger of the people that are still going to have the abortions, but not in medical condition. Like, is that
not just as bad or worse, because they're going to put themselves in a lot of danger to get rid of this life that is growing in them, potentially putting a lot of danger on themselves. And who's going to go to the hospital and to the cops to say, you know, I'm really sick because I had a rusty hanger jammed in places that shouldn't be jammed? And
well, I mean, you might say, look, if, again, going back to the slave analogy, what if I said, if I set all these slaves free, well, how are they going to support themselves? Nobody's going to want to hire them, right? Because, you know, that people might take them on as, if you make slavery illegal, these people are going to starve. What are they just going to, how are they going to go back to Africa? What are we going to do with them, right? So there are going to be all these problems and cause economic chaos. It's going to get, you're going to get like race riots down the line. Maybe they'll settle into urban ghettos and we'll have all these social problems. So better just to keep things as they are. I mean, the same sort of idea that you would say, no, that reasoning about these consequences for society say that we should tolerate this wrong thing because it would produce bad effects. But this wrong thing is a lot worse than these bad effects. And so people that think that abortion is killing human beings and that killing human beings is wrong would say these consequences you're talking about of a person who wants to end the life of their fetus, you know, they might be bad, but they're not going to be worse than, you know, a million human beings being killed every year through abortion. And you've had your hand up for quite some time.
Oh, I was... Well, to the comment that we were just talking about, I mean, our country was founded on Christianity, probably.
Not really, no. The Constitution says.
But I mean, it all goes back from, like, Europe. But, I mean, this is why it's wrong to begin with. But to your original question, there's a guy over there, he's hiding over there somewhere, but there was a guy that was, he made a good example of Russia and, you know, the what had happened up until they legalized abortions and actually offered help to mothers that were wanting to get rid of their babies. And I can't remember the number. I mean, we talked about it a lot in, I think, one of my human sexuality classes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was just staggering. We had the same thing happen. You know, you were actually talking a lot about some of the points that, you know, they were creating their own ghettos. We've got all kinds of social issues with back alley abortions, with the hangers and whatnot. I think this is pretty recent, until like the 80s, sometime.
I mean, a lot of those horror stories made a lot of press, but the number of women who suffered, you know, medical problems trying to get an illegal abortion, you know, are sort of the personal stories play. They take out your heartstrings, right? But if you look at statistically, you know, they're not they're you might say insignificant compared to like a, you know, million abortions every year or something. The question, and so most people, what they would do, because abortion was illegal, they would just, you know, have the child, put it up for adoption, or they might, you know, have the child and support the base they could. And so, I mean, those, not that I'm not saying those things didn't happen, but the numbers are not, there wasn't like an epidemic of women, you know, showing up in the emergency room with the effects of a botched abortion. Abortion was much more rare than it is today under those circumstances, when it was legal in a lot of states.
So, but why is it considered to be so wrong now to have an abortion? I mean, is it not due to somewhat religion, Christianity?
Not necessarily. I mean, the Hippocratic Oath, you know, which was written by a pagan, right? Hippocrates says, well, it says, I will not, no euthanasia, I will give no one a deadly poison, and I'll give no woman an abortive remedy. So, I mean, it's that abortion has been a taboo in many different societies, and it's pretty pervasive and universal. So it's not necessarily a Christian thing.
Because I've always thought that religion had a big part to do with like government in general. I mean,
it is true that religious people are the majority of almost every society. Over in Eastern Europe and Europe has become more secular. But even in like the strongest, I think the most you get is like maybe 30 or 40%, except for maybe China. Like, I think about a third of like Germans or Frenchmen, a third or a quarter are not secular people. But you know, you look at places like Latin America, it's, you know, 95%. And most of Africa, 95% of the people are religious. The Middle East, the same thing. America a little less, but still at 85%, depending on how you ask. The number of people that call themselves atheists is like 6%. But yeah, I mean, the other thing is that there's this sort of idea that if you're against abortion, you have to be some kind of religious fanatic or something. And note that Noonan makes no reference to the Bible or religion at all.
And if you're for abortion, or
if you're against it, yeah. Let's see, okay, you and then Isaac.
Well, there's a hypothetical situation actually, and a different issue, but I thought it was kind of interesting. It says fire breaks out in a fertility clinic, and you have time to save either a 5-year-old girl or a tray of 10 embryos. Is it wrong to save the girl? I just thought that it says something about the degrees.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's a really interesting thought experiment.
Regardless of what your views are.
So the choice is 10 embryos and like 1 5-year-old girl. And so if you're thinking about them all as being, you know, that if you're thinking about the embryos being worth a grown person or having like this high value, if it's 10 to 1, you think you'd go with the embryos. But most people would go with a 5-year-old girl. Why? Because the actual human life, but potential person, doesn't matter as much as an actual person, and that the embryos aren't actual people yet, and may never be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Those little girls can feel the pain of bringing it out.
Yeah. So maybe there's something. Maybe there. These hypothetical examples. It's hard to know. Like sometimes your intuitions might be due to the fact that you're thinking about this 5-year-old girl, you know, burning to death or something, experiencing pain. Isaac.
So I think they're also touching on topics of like utilitarianism. They're saying like, you know, if you make abortion illegal, then people are still going to get abortions. It's just going to be not as safe. And I think an argument against that would be like, if you want to take that same manner and say that, well, we have a necessary evil. Let's make sure it's safe. Then in that same line, you're going to have to say, well, people that want to shoot up cocaine and do heroin, we need to make that safe, so we need to make it available on the market. Or people that are this was going on in Oregon right now. People who have pedophile tendencies, they should be allowed to view child pornography so that it prevents them from actually going out and committing these acts. It seems like at some point you have to kind of draw the line and say, well, utilitarian, the best consequences seems to be underlining the moral principles that we already have. And people argue, like, I don't know, there was a case in Oregon, I think it's in Oregon, where a man was caught with child pornography on his computer, and they found him not guilty, and they set up a law that basically said that as long as these files aren't on the computer, and if you're just viewing them, it's okay. And then they referenced a bunch of things over in how in Sweden that it decreased the numbers of molestations. But it just seems like when you're going to compromise to the point of allowing these evils to be viewed or experienced, then it's no worse than not allowing them and people still doing them.
So this whole lesser of evils argument is interesting, and will show up in our discussion of drugs and some other things, and maybe even talking about pornography. Hand up over there. Do you want to have the last word?
I was just going to respond to what he had said about making it easy or safer for drug addicts to do their drugs and not spread.
Okay, I don't want to get into the drug issue. Say that for the drug issue,
I was just responding. He was talking about lesser evils and how
sure.
You can't. You know, it gets too wide and too broad. Well, we already do everything that you were saying. We already do all that.
Yeah, I realize that. That's the point. But my problem was saying that my problem was saying that just because a human does something doesn't mean that we should make it legalized and regulate it. I mean, we shouldn't, like, I don't think it's our responsibility as a society to bend over backwards to things that we consider to be wrong just to make them safe.
Everybody thinks that they're wrong. I think that's the biggest problem.
Well, would you say that child pornography is wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you would say that molestation is wrong.
Yeah. Yes.
But if there was scientific evidence that said that molestation will go down if we allow child pornography, would you be okay with child pornography?
If it was conclusive, I would.
Yeah. If it'll keep girls from, like, little girls from being touched.
If it'll stop them from getting raped and all they have to do is look at a picture.
look at the picture.
Okay, so that's scientifically accurate. But let's say it's not completely conclusive in that molestation will still occur, but to a lesser degree.
What about child prostitution?
Yes. Greater good.
To the greater good.
That's still making it better.
Well, let's talk about cloning.
Yeah.
So,
I'm an idealist. I understand where you're
going. We move on to cloning.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we get to cloning. So, cloning, pro or con? What do you think? How is Trump poll? Who thinks that human cloning should not be prohibited by law, but it should be allowed?
Well, are we talking about like genetic engineering?
Let's see, let's say reproductive cloning, not just tissues. So there's a difference between therapeutic cloning, which is cloning tissues and organs, and then a whole body cloning or reproductive cloning, which is cloning of human beings. So who agrees that we should have reproductive, or that people should be allowed to have reproductive cloning by law? Just like one, two, three, four? Who is pro human cloning?
Are you talking like just the organs or an
animal? No, a whole person.
Like if my kid dies and I have a piece of hair and I'm going to reclone them, or is that
Or like say I want because I love me. I think about like a special someone in my life, and then I focus on me, and then I think that I want to have like a little chip off the old block, literally. Or maybe a scrape off the old elbow or something, right? So I want to have someone who looks just like me as my son. Maybe my wife has a genetic problem that might come into our son, and I don't want like some strange woman outside. And maybe my wife has a problem with it, right? Maybe she feels guilty and inadequate for not being able to sire a child with me, and so she doesn't want any other woman to be. But she's cool with me cloning myself. Now let's suppose we we get all the kinks worked out of it, and we can make sure that a clone would be healthy. What would be wrong with that?
I think there could be actually some really cool pros to that.
What some pros?
Clone Einstein.
Well, there you go. Well, I mean that's why I picked the example, right? You know, I want some who's intelligent, articulate, handsome.
The people that should not. What's that award for people who
Darwin Award?
Those kind of people, they should not be cloned.
Should we sterilize them?
But those people probably couldn't afford it anyway, right? But the thing is, like, those are the people that reproduce the most, right? See, I would be very intentional about reproduction. Most people, they've done studies something like, 20%, 20 or 30% of people are, like, conceived by accident. Either parents weren't ready, or it just sort of happened, or unprotected sex, and they had the kid, and they end up getting married or living together for a while, and finally get married. So the idea is that I decide that I want to have a child, and I want this child to be genetically identical to me. Now I actually happen to have some experience with this, in that I have a twin brother, and he's a genetic duplicate of me. Now we're different in a lot of respects. He's a commie. He works for the Arts Council. He has bad taste in music, and he's got a drinking problem, right? So I'm like I'm a teetotaler, a libertarian, I college professor. He's like an accountant. If I had to like look at like sometimes people say they ask what I do for a living. I teach philosophy, and they go, oh, that's nice, and try to think of something to say, and then I usually say, well, it beats teaching accounting, because that's like the worst thing I could think to possibly do with my life is be an accountant. What is my brother? He is an accountant. So we're opposites in a lot of ways, but we both work for the government, we both have a quirky sense of humor. So I mean, so I'd say that we are, although we could probably fool you if we got our hair and our beards and all that stuff the same.
In fact, he probably shaves and cuts his hair a little short.
He has a beard, but it's like a small beard, and he has to have a haircut for his job. So, he has to wear like a suit and tie. I think about like wearing a suit and tie to work. I just leaves a bad taste in my house. So we're very different, but we're genetically identical. So you shouldn't think that like if I have a clone, he's going to be just like me. We're as similar as I suppose any brothers. Now we shared common experiences, and we were born at the same time, so maybe we're treated pretty much the same, different than like brothers that are separated by a couple of years. But it's a difference in degree, not of kind. So what would be wrong with me, having a son who's got my genetics, and he's going to be his own person. Maybe I'll have two or three. They're all going to be chips off the old block. Why should the law prohibit me from doing that? I mean, while I'm at it, I could like try to make them a little better. So get better skin. I get rid of the like nearsightedness, right? I can tinker around with the DNA a little bit. Get rid of that nearsightedness gene. Be a little taller. I was born, the doctor saw my feet and he said, oh, your boy's going to be 6 feet tall. He's got these size 11 feet. And it's like, it just turned out not to be. So I could like, you know, I could make him like me, but better. Everything I wanted to be. Yeah.
When you get into that kind of stuff, like making them taller and whatever, you know, giving them the best genes possible, I think you get into messing with other people's lives. Like the example I can think of is like, you know, maybe this kid would have been 5'5" and 150 pounds his whole life, but if you know, give him some of the good genes and he grows up to be 6'3" and just a stocky guy and he goes on to the NBA and takes someone else's position that could have potentially had that position, you know.
But you play all that would have, could have, should have, doesn't that apply to like everything you do?
Not would have, yeah.
Like if you took a job, do you feel guilty about the guy that didn't get the job?
I mean, no. But then that other guy also probably it was a level playing field, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like he didn't have all the genetic enhancements.
Well, I mean,
it's legal for one, it's legal for another. He could have gone.
I don't know, I like the idea of being able to tamper maybe with the genes, but maybe an exact clone is a little too extreme. Just due to the fact that there's way too many people as there is now.
I don't see the problem with it. I mean, you have third world countries have problems with overpopulation. I've taken an airplane, I see all this empty space. I'm thinking, where are all these people I hear about that are overpopulating the planet? Way in the back. You, sir.
Yeah, the thing about adjusting, like making them taller, like more smarter and stuff like that, it said in one of the essays, like it's kind of messing like with their freedom in a way, because it's like shaping, you're kind of shaping the future, like their possibilities in the future. So I thought that was pretty interesting. It's like, if you make them taller, then you're giving them, you're like forcing all of these like other, even opportunities on them.
But like you don't do that with your normal life. When you're thinking about like planning out your life, you think, oh, I'll just let nature take its course. I'll just, you know, I'll let, because I shouldn't try to, you know, plan or try to do what's best. I'll just act on whatever impulse I have. This idea of reproduce, that letting nature take its course or sort of letting, I mean, you look at the way people do it now, it's just random, right? Maybe they're a little choosy when they pick the person they're going to procreate with. But you don't know what's going to happen with those two genes get together. It's kind of a crapshoot. So why shouldn't I want my kid not to be nearsighted or not to need braces or special shoes or have bad skin if I can prevent that? Well, it seems like he would thank me, right?
But if you're enhancing that, it's different than taking away the disability.
Yeah, those are all
Those are. What's the difference between enhancement and taking away disability?
Well, I don't know, but being tall is really awesome.
It is awesome.
Having disabilities.
Would I resent my father for making me extra tall? No, I would say, hey, I'm glad I'm not that pipsqueak that I get in class with, but I'd feel really bad about myself, or maybe to have that Napoleon complex or something, or whatever, right? Let's see, yeah.
What if they grew up thinking of different views than you have, and what if they feel like cloning isn't really a good thing, and that they question themselves as a person because they, you know, they were cloned, you know, have this natural occurrence or whatnot, or what if they resent you for some of the characteristics you gave them? What if they don't like being tall? What if, you know, like, they would have liked to wear glasses or something?
I've never heard of children resenting their parents for anything, right? So it seems like they might resent you for it, but they might thank you for it. You really don't know. If you do something which is going to give them some advantage, chances are they're going to like it. What if I decide, like, I want a kid with red hair? Because I watched, I've always like, I mean, if I want to make like a clone of me but with red hair, because I kind of like red hair, maybe I watched Happy Days growing up, and that Richie Cunningham was I always wanted a kid to look like Richie Cunningham. I mean, is my kid going to say I hate you because you gave me red hair?
Probably.
specifically did not.
Yeah, he has red.
What if he's? What if now? What if my wife has a recessive gene for red hair, and my kid's born with red hair? Then is he going to think differently? He's still going to have the red hair. Why should it matter to him whether it was just a chance occurrence or whether I planned it? He's still got the result. Yeah.
Just to stir up the pot completely, would a clone have, if you follow a certain religion, would the clone have a soul? Because it wasn't made. I mean, if you're a Christian or whatever, you know, would the clone have a soul? Would it have a soul because it wasn't created by God or it wasn't created normally?
Uh-huh.
I mean, so then wouldn't that cause all kinds of ridiculous religious wars and like outrage and
I don't know. You don't get much religious wars anymore, except for maybe Middle East, but people used to ask the same question about test tube babies. You know, they call it in vitro fertilization. And my last class, there was someone in the class who was actually conceived in a petri dish and shared that with the class. You know, does she have a soul? Well, I don't think anybody questioned whether she had a soul or not. So once cloning becomes prolific, people won't think anything of it.
But that's taking a piece from a man and a woman, whereas cloning is, like you said earlier, taking some elbow dust and just putting it in a petri dish. That's
you're still making like an embryo. It's technology. Isaac.
I was just going to touch on it earlier, but the point about using our children as vehicles for our own ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
We already have that problem, like especially in China, where if you're born a girl, you just hope you don't die. It's all about having male children in China and South Korea and stuff.
Not just in China. Like, my parents wanted me to be a pharmacist or an optometrist.
Well, yeah, not only that, and then this whole idea of like
philosophy. Is there much money in that philosophy stuff? Would you be a doctor? Or if you're going to be a doctor, just be a pharmacist or an optometrist. You mentioned this idea that parents trying to live out their lives with their children seems to objectify them. But
the other part was the whole bringing back of eugenics. The last time the human race attempted eugenics was during the Nazi period, where they tried to create the Aryan race.
But that's the thing. Is like the
No. I was talking eugenics.
Order.
Blue eye. What was talking about? Killing. Order. Talking about the taking specific couples and making them breed to create a superior race. That was the eugenics.
I say that the Nazis gave eugenics a bad name. So eugenics is just the idea of trying to improve on human nature. Now, it doesn't mean you're like sterilizing the people that have bad genes. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about allowing people the freedom to improve on human nature, which is, you know, the sort of positive side. Yes, sir.
Going back to what you said about it being a crapshoot and the comment about a level playing field, I would argue that a crapshoot is the level playing field. You know, there is no control over the process as far as what is going to be produced. So that in itself is a level playing field.
Well, what if you're like born in Zimbabwe? Should the world should be like a world tax, and you should get like some money sent over to your family because you're going to be really disadvantaged, or Burundi, or Bangladesh, right? I mean, life as it is it fair? Who you are and what advantages you have in life and where your starting position is, it's an accident of fate. What country you're born in, who your parents are, whether you have both a father and a mother, what their personal characteristics are. I mean, all that stuff's a crapshoot. So why not just take like one, why is this one aspect suddenly wrong for me to monkey around with the genetics or decide to have a clone? That's wrong, but it's okay for other things to be unfair and unequal. Well, actually, we're out of time, so ponder that. Until next time, these economic issues we'll talk about starting on Tuesday. I'll have some readings in Moodle and handouts up there later on, and handouts in class on Tuesday.